Vision. One way to fix it. When one desires to gain any knowledge from the Bible and Science and Health, which is the textbook of Christian Science, title being Science and Health with the Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, it makes sense to begin with the introductory quotes, and there are three of them, at the beginning of the textbook. The first one is words quoted from Jesus, and it's recorded in the Gospel of John, and it states that ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Free of everything that's not truth. Not be enslaved to error and mistakes and evil. Very liberating. The second one is from Shakespeare. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Imagine what would happen if we only let truth in our consciousness and did not let anything that was opposite to truth and anything that's even slightly less than 100% truth is the opposite of truth. Because the only substance is spirit, and spirit is flawless. So there cannot be even 0.00001% of error to qualify to be part of the truth. So we must feed into consciousness only the truth. Mary Baker Eddy calls Shakespeare immortal. And he quotes him a variety of times throughout her writings. The third quote is from Mary Baker Eddy, and it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." So God has blessed Mary Baker Eddy. Is that a person? Almost the entire community that names themselves a Christian believes Jesus to be God. But what did Jesus say when the Pharisees asked him, what is the greatest commandment of all? In fact, what they said was, "Dear good master, what is the greatest commandment of all?" Jesus set them straight right at the beginning. He said, "Why call me good? There is only one good but God." And then he gave them the greatest commandment with something else to say. He said, the first and greatest commandment is, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the latest is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." So it is a great help if we also cite that to ourselves when we're ready to study anything out of the Bible or any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings. King Solomon, which was the son of King David, the one that slew Goliath and saved his nation from a bloody war, pardon my French, King Solomon was very humble when he succeeded the throne from his father, King David. And the story goes that God asked him what he could do for him. And King Solomon said that he basically didn't feel qualified to judge his people properly and fairly, and would God please give him the wisdom to do so? And as the story goes, God not only gave him the wisdom to do it, but because he only asked for something that was for the good of all humanity, and particularly the ones that were under his kingdom, God also gave him riches that to this day apparently is more than even the individual that is deemed to be the richest man in the world has. So, seek ye first the kingdom of God. Wow. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul. Wow. They're very effective. So, if we do that, it says, all these things will be added unto you. I believe that means that all of the spiritual qualities will be enhanced within our own consciousness if we seek the truth about God first. In fact, we need to do it in the middle and at last. So, beginning, middle, and end. That's what we need to do in our actions, our thought, our speech, our prayer, and any thought we have about the holy. And since the Bible says that we should pray without ceasing, do you imagine that maybe Mary Baker Eddy, when she says, oh, thou hast heard my prayer, that she was living her prayer? In other words, she was living to get a better understanding of God and make sure that every thought, speech, and action that she embarked upon was following the Christ consciousness, the pure, flawless, spiritual Christ consciousness. So it's not that God has a set of ears and he hears us talk. It's that God has established, as it states in Genesis chapter 1 up through verse 3 of chapter 2, that God has recognized all existence as being the one and only creation there ever was. And that's with the help of some translation from Mary Baker Eddy, who says that when it states in the beginning in Genesis, the first few words of chapter 1, that it really means in the only creation. And of course, when we get into chapter 2 of Genesis, verse 4, then of course, that is flipping it. And it's giving us a material view, and we can't see very well in a material view because our real vision comes from spirit. And so it tells us that sure enough, a mist went up. But if you want to try to find the truth in here, help yourself. So those are the quotes that should give us a roadmap on what we should be thinking about no matter what we are studying out of the Bible and science and health. There are six tenets that guide us in what Christian Science is all about. And the very first one says that we shall follow the inspired word of the Bible. So the inspired word of the Bible means that we need to have the spiritual translation of the Bible. And if you don't think we need to have a spiritual translation of the Bible, take a look at Psalms chapter 103, the entire chapter, and you will see that it is a mixture. So we better know what we're reading in order to get the spiritual translation of what is being stated. Otherwise, we will be in a state of confusion. The title to this recording is that this is one way to fix the vision. Now, when Jesus said that we should love our neighbor as ourselves, that is the golden rule. Wouldn't you agree? That's it. do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Love your brother. Love your brother. And of course, that's just a generic term. It really means love everyone as if they were your brother or sister or son or daughter or your best friend. And Mary Baker Eddy has an article called Love Your Enemies. And she says, who is your enemy except someone that you think is an enemy? And she basically explains that there should be no enemy in consciousness. And she states that she's devoted time every hour of the day to make sure she was not thinking of anyone or any event as being anything other than the perfection of God that gave us an opportunity to learn from and to feed into our consciousness as a pure activity. And if we were viewing something that appeared to be evil in action, we needed to flip it. Like the gardener. There were two gardeners that lived next door to each other. Both of them had large gardens. They were taking care of estates. And when one of them, who was not such a good gardener, needed a plant, he would go to the other garden and steal it. So one time, the gardener that had plants that would be missing from time to time had a visitor, a friend, came to see him. And he said, you have a lovely garden, but what's this hole over here? Are you getting ready to plant a new plant there? He said, well, my gardener friend that lives next door, he felt he needed that, so he borrowed that plant last night, and therefore I have a hole. But don't worry, I'll take care of it. He said, well, why do you call him your friend gardener? He said, well, because he reminds me of what I should not be doing. So he was flipping from what might be considered an evil act to a reminder to be good, a reminder to watch our own thought, speech, and action. And that's what we need to do whenever we see anything that we believe is less than following the Christ consciousness. Most people are aware that if you hate, that really is something that has a major negative impact on the one doing the hating. And if we're doing the hating, look in the mirror. Point the finger at the one in the mirror and see where your thumb is pointing. It's probably either pointing up to the sky where you're blaming God, or it's pointing back at you. In any event, the story is that is a reminder that forget about pointing the finger at someone else. You better think about cleaning out your own consciousness. Dr. Fluno was given the task of traveling throughout the United States back around 1880 by Mary Baker Eddy to deliver a lecture that was entitled Criticism. And this goes hand in hand with what she did on the hour every day. And that was to make sure that she was not thinking ill of anyone or anything at all under any circumstances. And he states in that lecture, which is on our website, that hate or criticism leads to all evil. Let that sink in. Criticism leads to all evil. He doesn't say some. He's not selective. He said all evil. So if we want to quit thinking about evil, and especially about personality, attaching the evil to an individual or a person or a personality, it's very easy. The formula is very easy. As a matter of fact, Christian Science is very easy to understand. What did John represent? The disciple of Jesus. It's quoted. If you ever attend a church, Christian Science Church, it's quoted as the closing statement in every Sunday church service. He represented love. How about Jesus? When the soldiers came to arrest him, Peter cut off the ear of one of them. Jesus said, "Put up thy sword, Peter." And Jesus healed his ear. Jesus was talking love while he was hanging on the cross. He was concerned about his mother's well-being, and he asked John to take care of her. I mean, the most difficult circumstance, and he's talking love. How about Mary Baker Eddy? She had everyone attacking her. She always responded with love. And as mentioned, she stopped every hour to make sure she was only thinking good about everyone. How many came to the crucifixion? What do we have? John, the only disciple out of 12. We had Mary Magdalene, the woman of ill repute that was totally transformed over at Simon's house when Jesus was being entertained there. And Mary Magdalene had her total transformation confirmed. There were three or four women. His mother was there, Mary Magdalene, and a couple others. He preached to 4,000 men at one place and 5,000 to another group of men. They didn't count women and children. So you can imagine there probably would have been 10 or 15,000 or more people at each place. And what was his church? His church was outside on the hillside. He didn't have a church. Mary Baker Eddy didn't want a church. She had one, and they were renting a building and using it. And she said, "We really don't need a church. I'm closing it down." So she closed it down. But it wasn't long after that everybody pressured her to have a church. So she realized that they needed to go through that experience so they could realize that a church was not the answer to individual salvation. Because it's really between us and God. And having conversation with other Christian Scientists does not give us individual salvation. We have to work it out ourselves. It's between us and God. That's one reason Mary Baker Eddy did not interfere when the church would excommunicate people that she knew were spiritual in their actions. So we need to deal with God directly. And sometimes a church can be very helpful, especially when you're getting started and you appreciate the support that you get from others. And there's a few churches that are doing very good things. But the majority of them are violating the rules of the manual of the Mother Church that were written by Mary Baker Eddy. And the Boston Church is in total violation of the manual. So do what Mary Baker Eddy says, not what other people do. Mary Baker Eddy said, follow your leader only as far as she follows the Christ. So that's what we need to do with everyone. If we think we have found somebody that is really advanced in science and we want to follow them, we better follow them only as far as they're following the Christ. And the best thing is to just deal with God directly and not be looking at a personality to follow. So, if Jesus tells us that we need to love our neighbor as ourselves, is that giving or taking? Is loving, expressing love, giving or taking? Well, I believe most people that are awake, when they consider that, are going to automatically say, well, that's giving. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Is that giving or taking? Pretty hard to justify that that is taking. Jesus was a symbol of love. John was a symbol of love. Paul was a symbol of love in most of his life. After he had his walk, and instead of persecuting the Christians, he was one of them, promoting it. He gave us a lot of great books in the Bible, or he was responsible for a lot of the writings in the New Testament. Mary Baker Eddy was a symbol of love. The greatest practitioners out there are symbols of love. We know love is giving. It's not taking. That is, if you're talking about true spiritual love. So, do you think Christian Science is giving or taking? We have on our website two very simple sets of words. And this is right at the top of every single page. So you can't miss it. It says, life eternal, a life of giving, adds and multiplies, spiritual and good. On page 587 of the textbook in the glossary, Mary Baker Eddy defines good as God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. And omniscience, as you likely know, means omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. So if you couple that with the definition of God, and one very straightforward one is page 465 in Recapitulation, which is a summary of chapter 1 through 13, she says that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. And on page 587 in the glossary, she defines God as being the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, and intelligence. So she added that extra all-substance and intelligence, capturing two words out of the qualities of God, I believe, just to emphasize and seal it. So we can't be thinking about matter as substance, and we can't be thinking about brain as intelligence. And she says it's the great I am. In other words, we ought to probably stop thinking about ourselves as I am. I am this, I am that. Because I am, especially if it's capitalized or we give emphasis to it, that should be talking about who God is. That's the conclusion Moses came to. That God is the I am. I am that I am is how God was defined. And on that same page is where the definition of good was, on page 587 that was just recited a moment ago. So if we think about those definitions of God and good, and the three quotes at the beginning of the textbook, we think about the first and second commandment, the two greatest commandments of all, we really can only come to one conclusion, and that is that Christian Science is love. So at the top of our website where it says life eternal, a life of giving, it adds and multiplies, and it's spiritual and good. Well, we can imagine what the opposite is. And that's up there also at the top of our website. Every page on the website. It says life lost. A life of taking. Subtracts and divides. Material and evil. If we're not giving, we're taking. If we're passive, that's taking. That is leaving our door of consciousness open for universal belief to come right on in and occupy our consciousness. And if you don't think evil is occupying our consciousness when we're passive, you better reevaluate. Mary Baker Eddy says, it's very important to make sure that we don't have any evil in our consciousness. We have to clean it out. Go get a large quantity of Clorox and put that bleach in there. You got to clean that from top to bottom. One of the features of evil is that it works on deception, dividing and conquering. And obviously that's going to subtract from any element of good that you might be having in your consciousness. And when you talk about dividing good, you're breaking it down into little pieces so that it can be destroyed. And you're going to be very materialistic in your actions. And you're going to be a real star performer for the devil. Remember, the devil is evil with a D on it. You could call it the devil. The evil. D-E is a word used in some of the foreign languages that mean exactly that. So, that's at the top of every page of our website. It's a reminder that we have to have a life of giving. If we don't have a life of giving, you're going to have an extremely difficult time healing. If you can heal when you're not living a life of giving, then you've been able to perform a miracle. Because giving is a primary element of what our life should be. Mary Baker Eddy went with Laura Sargent her right-hand gal to a store, furniture store, to decide on some chairs that she wanted to order for Pleasant View. So they went there and sat down with the owner of the store. And when the appointment was over, Laura asked Mary Beth Grady, she says, "Why weren't you involved in this conversation? You just sat there. You didn't say a word." She says, "Didn't you see that the owner of the store had a problem that needed attention? And apparently he had something visual that was easy to see that indicated that he had a problem." She immediately turned her thought to healing. She wanted to clear from her consciousness any element that was not perfect about viewing the situation. She had to put in the bleach. She had to guard her door of thought and focus on what the need was. She had one of her students visit her one time, and it happened to be a man, and she says, "What do you do when you're walking down the street and you see a stray dog? Or you see a person in a wheelchair in need? Or you see an accident?" He didn't know how to answer. He sat there and without any answer. And she said, "Well, are you a Christian Scientist?" That woke him up. He knew exactly what he should have been doing, but he wasn't doing it. And he said, "No, Mrs. Eddy, I am not a Christian Scientist." How about us? Are we passive when we see that there is a need? Or are we giving a life of giving? Are we just taking everything we can from life? Are we only thinking about ourselves as we're walking down the street, maybe on the way to an appointment or shopping or whatever we're going to do? Are we just thinking about ourselves? When we check out of a store and the clerk goes through and runs our things through their scanner and tells us how much we owe and so forth, what are we thinking about? Mary Beth Grady says the difference between success and failure, more than any other single thing, is dependent upon how we use our moments. And what is a moment? A moment is the smallest segment of time. You can't define it with mathematics, because mathematics can always be subtracted or divided, or a combination. So there is no smallest in mathematics. There's the greatest, because they have a symbol with a figure eight lying on its side that's called infinity. So you can express that, but again, that's a word, infinity. But they don't use the word moment in defining mathematics. So you have to use the word. So how are we using our moments? I mean, we have moments all day long. When we start our day, we begin with 1,440 minutes. How are we going to use them? We have moments occur all day long. Most everyone wastes them. They're passive. They don't use them constructively. Mary Baker Eddy wanted to make sure that she was focusing her moments on thinking good about everyone and everything. Are we a Christian Scientist? If we see an accident, are we treating that immediately in our own thought? If we see someone in a wheelchair, if we see a stray dog, there's a store that I frequent, maybe once or twice a month. And there's a lady with her daughter. The daughter's in a wheelchair. And she has absolutely, to belief, no control over herself whatsoever. The mother is always very pleasant. They don't speak the same language I do. So I made up 2 pages of C.S. thoughts that addressed exactly the problem and used the internet to translate it to their language. And you would not believe how grateful she was. I happened to be back at the store a week or two later, and I asked her if it was any good in my broken translation of her language, which I'm not very proficient at speaking, but she understood. And she said, yes, she was, it's like tears came to her eyes. Because everybody walks by and they might throw them a coin or something. I mean, I don't know what happens to their folding money. I would be embarrassed to throw somebody a coin. I mean, I don't drink coffee at all. But even to buy a cup of coffee or a cold drink, it takes probably a dollar. I don't drink cold drinks. I don't drink soft drinks. But, I mean, what can you do with a dime or a quarter or half a dollar? I never see anybody give anything but rattling money to these people. The same when you go into a store. They don't use bags anymore. That's probably one of the few good things that came out of the fake pandemic, is they stopped using so many millions and millions and billions of plastic bags. But anyway, they at least assemble the things that you buy and put them in your cart. I mean, I would be ashamed to not give them something that would be a little more substantial than rattling money. How about the clerk? Do you smile? And if she was efficient, do you thank her? Do you smile at everyone when you're shopping? Most people have a pretty neutral face. They don't really have an expression of joy and happiness, but we can. That's one form of giving. We can give in many ways. The Bible says we should tithe. That means a tenth part. And I believe that means for an average student. I don't know how you did in school, but someone that just was a C student in school was very common. You want to be a C student in Christian Science? Well, then give a tenth part. If you're worth $100 million, have you given $10 million away? If you're worth $1 billion, have you given $100 million away? If you happen to be on Social Security as your only source, maybe you're retired. I don't know what you get. Maybe you get $2,000 a month. Maybe you get $200 a month. Do you give 10% of it? It's not the money quantity. It is your heart. Where is your heart? Are you giving or are you taking? Not giving is taking. Not loving is hating. Where are you? What are you thinking about? How are you conducting your life? You're the one that has to work out your salvation. You're the one that has to have a life of giving if you want to be able to heal. I make the proposal that you will have a very difficult time healing anything unless you have a life of generous giving. Generous. Now, if you think a C student is generous, then so be it. What do you have you can give? Do you have clothes you're not wearing? Do you have anything in your garage that if you cleaned it out and had everything in order, that you could give some things away? Most people live in a place that has these thrift shops where they can give things away that are used. Nothing says you can't give away something that's new. A lot of people buy more clothes than what they need, and they never even take the price tag off of them. They hang there in their closet. If somebody is stranded on the highway, now if you're a single woman or even a married woman, and it's a man by himself, you may not want to stop. But there's many circumstances where you could stop and help. I've been stranded on the road. Nobody would stop. Or let's put it this way. Several would go by before anyone would stop. Yeah. I was stranded on a two-wheel vehicle that I have. And I was only about 3 minutes from where I lived. But there was a, you might call it a flash flood. And I couldn't get home because it was deeper than what my vehicle would go through in water. But if you had a good sized truck, be no problem. So I didn't know how I would get home. It occurred while I was gone shopping. And there is a place, in order to get to where my home is, that is a dip. And whenever there's a fast rain, heavy rain, that accumulates in that dip. And they don't have proper drainage. So I didn't know how I would get home, but what happened is the engine on my two-wheel vehicle stopped running. There was a loud noise for a few seconds, 5 seconds maybe, and then it stopped running. It's like the engine froze up. I quietly made the statement. I know that mind is in control of every moment of my activity. Because mind is all action. The only action there is the action of mind, divine mind. And God is love. And love is protection. Love is completion. Love is wholeness. And there's nothing left out of the wholeness of love. That's about how long I talked to myself. I mean, there was not it's on a road that there are no houses at all. And it's about probably a 2 mile walk. I knew I couldn't go home. and I didn't want to leave the vehicle there anyway. And I knew I couldn't get through the water by walking. It would be up to my, well, I don't know, maybe I could, but it would be up to my waist. And I didn't really want to do that. And walking back the other way, it'd be a 2-mile walk. So as soon as I got done saying something along those lines, a truck came by, and it was like a, you know, it was a good sized truck, like a two ton truck, and there were like 6 people in it, 4 men, a couple of women, and it had a bed on the back. And they said, "Can we help you?" And I said, "Wow." I said, "You're like an angel from heaven." And I said, "The vehicle just stopped running. I have no idea what the problem is. There was a loud noise for a few seconds and then it stopped." I said, "I just live up here at the end of this road and you turn right." I said, "But there is a dip in the road, but you won't have any trouble with your truck if you're willing to go through it." They said, "No problem." The 4 guys got a hold of it, and they put it up on the back of the truck. And they sat, the 2 of them sat back in the back to hold it in position. And I was home within, you know, a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. Just like that. I didn't have to wave them down or anything. They came up and they stopped. I mean, it was kind of like a deserted area of the road, so they knew that I wasn't there by choice. Stopped because there wasn't even any place to park. You know, it was like on the surface of the road. So they just did it. Do we do that? Do we stop when we see there's somebody that has a problem? I was coming out of a store about 6 months ago, and a guy walked up to me, and he says, "Could you give me some money?" I looked at him, and he looked good. You know, I mean, had clean clothes on, and, you know, his hair was combed. He didn't look like a bum. And so I wondered, well, why in the world would he be asking for money? Everything looks good with him. I said, "Well, why are you asking for money?" He said, "I lost my job, and I wasn't very smart. I didn't keep any reserve, and I haven't eaten since yesterday, and I wanted to get enough money for some food." He said, "I don't even have money for my vehicle so that I can go and look for another job." He drove a 2-wheel vehicle, and it doesn't take much gas to operate them. So I said, "Well, what do you do?" He said, "I'm a handyman." He said, "My whole life I've had experience with everything, electric, plumbing, carpentry, concrete. I can operate a welder, a butane device for like doing pipe." I said, "Well, that's very interesting. I have a list that I've been accumulating for several months of things that I need done at my house." I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll give you an opportunity. If you're honest, and if you're capable of able to do what you say you are, you can work on my list. And we'll see how it goes. We'll go a day at a time." He was extremely grateful. So we went over to his house and got his vehicle. He said he had enough to get to the gas station. And I filled it up for him. And we went to my house and I showed him the list. And it was in the late afternoon, and I didn't want to get started then because I had other plans. So we arranged for him to come the next morning. He ended up working for me for 3 months. Took him that long to do the list. The day he got done with the list, he told me he had found a job and he could go working for them starting the next day. It didn't take much. All I did was ask him why he wanted the money. Mind is omni-intelligence. If we conduct our life without intelligence, we are not following the laws of God. If we just give them money, we're not doing our job. That's not loving. That's not giving. Giving money to someone without even knowing anything about the situation is ignorance. Do we want to be ignorant? That's a D student, maybe a failure, a D, an E student, or an F student. I don't know, some places call a failure E and some of them call them F. Where I came from, we called it F. We had A, B, C, D, and F. So do we want to be a C student? Yeah, we just walk right on by. We'd think to ourselves, you know, don't bother me. We may not say it, but we would just act that way. So are we a Christian Scientist? That should be the natural thing that we should do. We should see what their need is and see if we can give it to them. See if we can give them an opportunity to dig themselves out of a hole. I gave him enough to eat for the night and to fill up his gas tank, but I didn't give him any more because I gave him an opportunity for him to do it himself. And that's more valuable to most people that have any respect for themselves than it is to live off of a donation. Are we cultivating a life of giving? We have a button on our website that says how Christian Science heals. We have another one that says heal everything. We have another one that says divine metaphysics. Another one that says system platform. Mary Baker Eddy tells us on page 146, she says, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Now, what is disease? Dis-ease. It is anything that is a problem. Anything from you hurt your little finger to you're dead. In belief. It applies to everything. Healing sin, sickness, disease, and raising the dead. That's what disease is. That's what a dis-ease is. That is what a lack of perfection is. And she gives us what? The formula. Most people look at that word as if it was a snake that's ready to devour them, or a hippopotamus, you know, or an alligator. If you're not utilizing the system of divine metaphysics that Mary Baker Eddy tells us about, you're missing out on what Christian Science is all about. What does she tell us on page 330? She says, when the following platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. Now, what do you think she means by the letter? She means exactly what she says on page 146, the system of divine metaphysics. And what do you think she means about the spirit? Exactly what we have up at the top of every page of our website. Life eternal, a life of giving, where you're adding and multiplying your spiritual and your goodness that you are living. If you don't think she's using a formula, then you're blind, deaf, and dumb. That's not meant to be a criticism, or I'm in deep trouble. But just read the words. I mean, what could it possibly mean? What does Einstein say? He said that religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. Christian Science is the only religion that gives you both science and religion. He also said that if Christian Science was practiced systematically and scientifically, that it will heal. His friend, Dr. Underwood, was on the Atomic Energy Commission back around the World War II time, where they were trying to figure out how to develop an atom bomb so that they could destroy civilization. I think Einstein was too smart to be on that commission. He said, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. We're going to destroy ourselves. But his friend, Dr. Underwood, was on there. He's a PhD in physics. So anyway, everyone on the commission, except for Dr. Underwood, his friend, passed on from radiation. Einstein had tinkered around with Christian Science, but he wasn't really that serious about it. And then when his friend was healed from the radiation, and the only one out of the whole group in the committee, or the people in the commission, you know, Atomic Energy Commission, the only one that survived, he said, wow, I better take a look at this. So he became very serious, started attending the local church there. He went into the reading room and spent quiet hours studying. And then he started making some very dramatic statements, very substantial statements. I don't mean drama from the standpoint of acting or being emotional. But he said, everything that is in this book. In fact, he said, blessed art thou, referring to Mary Baker Eddy. And thou was with a capital T. He said, blessed art thou, because everything that is in this book. And then he said, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. That's 80. So in other words, she discovered Christian Science in 1866. I don't think he was even born yet. But certainly when he realized what it was around 1946, because if he said 80 years, that would have been 1866 and 1946. So he spent his life trying to figure out what made the world tick. And here she had already discovered it. If he wouldn't have had his head in his research lab all the time, he might have saved himself some time, like his whole life. Because she had it all figured out, thanks to her spiritual inspiration from Divine Mind. What do you think about time? Frederick L. Rawson said that they used to teach, and he's from the UK, he said they used to teach that there was no time. But they stopped doing it. For the same reason that Nikola Tesla, around 1900, was unable to light up the world for free. Because he discovered how to have free electricity. He walked down the street holding a light bulb, and the light bulb was lit. But he couldn't get it off the ground because the corrupt industry wanted to have all their poles and cables and their whole industry all over the world. And they wanted to charge people. When I was in business, we paid over $2,000 a month for our electric. We paid over $2,000 a month for our telephone. Now you can have it free by utilizing the internet. And if we didn't have this corrupt bureaucracy, we could have electricity free. President Trump says that by the end of the year, next year, he said he will have our electric bill cut in half. I think he's figuring that he's going to have to phase in the free electricity because his uncle John, that's President Trump's middle name, named after his uncle, but his uncle was a very well-known professor at, I think it was MIT. And he was good friends with Nikola Tesla. And so all of Tesla's papers he had access to. And when Tesla passed on, then apparently the papers went to his uncle. And when his uncle passed on, then they went to President Trump. I'm not sure exactly the details about it, but I think he will probably tell us after he is back in officially as the president in next month. This is December. Tomorrow is Christmas Day, as a matter of fact. So in 1 month from now, less than 1 month, a little bit, he will be officially back in, although he is the commander-in-chief right now. He never left. He has always been commander-in-chief. The present fake administration has never been in the White House. It is under lock and key, guarded by the U.S. Marine Corps. And Trump is in his commander-in-chief. Oops. I didn't mean to say his name. Oh, I guess I did say it anyway, President Trump. So anyway, he's never gave the nuclear codes because it was a fake election. In fact, the election in 2020 was a sting operation. So they've got all the information on everyone that committed crimes, and they've arrested many. They've arrested a couple of couple of people from the Supreme Court of the U.S. They've arrested many judges, juries, all the people that had those fake lawsuits against Trump, tried to put him in prison. Most of them have been disposed of. Through Gitmo, which is the U.S. Navy JAG operation. JAG is the Judge Advocate General of the Navy, and they're in charge of the tribunals, military tribunals. The head of the CDC, the head of National Institute of Health, all these guys that had the fake pandemic, they're all gone. They arrested 950 doctors in one day who were in on that pandemic. And these guys that are arrested for treason, I mean, they're executed. And they use the old fashioned. They hang them. I had no idea that they still did that kind of thing for the execution, but they do. They've been very busy down there. And they also have a big facility out on Guam. And it's full. They've arrested tens of thousands of people. Anyway, there's been a lot going on behind the scenes. And that's why the fake president in there, in fact, he's not even in there. He hasn't been in there. And, you know, they had a formal ceremony on January 20, 2021. And they had three cannons. And I don't know whether you've ever watched any of these ceremonies, but it's supposed to be 21 cannons. And that's for an inauguration of a new president. And a three cannons is the ritual for a funeral. A funeral for the president. And that's what they had when the fake president went in. So everybody thinks that he's officially in there. He's never been in the White House. He's never flown with any airplane that had the presidential call sign on it. And they have to have the presidential call sign on it. People have been so tricked. We ought to be very grateful to Elon Musk, who bought Twitter, changed the name to X, because they're taking all these guys down. You know, that we're doing all this MSM. They've arrested many of the people running the MSM TV shows, cable shows. Anyway, my gosh, we're over 1 hour already on this recording. Didn't realize so much time had gone by. Time flies when you're having fun. By the way, joy, J-O-Y, is extremely important. Wentworth Winslow, one of our most successful practitioners of all time, he raised a boy from the dead, healed every problem that he was faced with, had 15-minute appointments. Then in 15 minutes, most of them were healed. Otherwise, it was a catalyst, and the healing came shortly thereafter. He never failed to heal any case. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. It's not something that's supposed to go on month after month after month. It's supposed to be quick. And the top people, that's exactly what they do. They have instantaneous healings. Or, let's say, within 15 minutes. Frederick L. Rawson, another one, 15-minute appointments. Joel Goldstein, another one, 15-minute appointments. Frederick L. Rawson was so advanced, he was an expert in electricity. People came from all over the world to have him solve their electrical problems. And this was 115, 120, or 30 years ago. I mean, you know, they were dealing with horse and buggy. They had some trains on the eastern part of the U.S., but they had not had the one that goes all the way to California through. I don't think that happened until sometime later. I think it was the late 1800s. But when Mary Baker Eddy started sending lecturers around the U.S., you know, this was like 1870 to 1880, before they had access to all four corners of the U.S. So it was a, you know, it was quite a deal to give some of these lectures. Anyway, he had such a mastery of everything that he discovered how to heal back in time. So if this was 1910 or 1915 or whatever, and you had a problem that you've been working with for 10 years, he could go back and heal it as soon as you knew you had a problem. So all the misery that you had for that 10 years would disappear from consciousness. He did it over 500 times. As I mentioned, he was an electrical expert, and so he was a very well-known researcher. So what he would do is he would try something on healing, and if it worked, then he would use it. If it didn't work, he'd go back to the drawing board. Very wonderful practitioner that was an enormous asset to the movement. Frederick L. Rawson, R-A-W-S-O-N. We have his publications on our website. As of now, everything's free. So if you are a taker, you know, go take it. If you're a giver, then maybe you will have a second thought about what you're doing with that extra $1,000 or whatever you got, $100, $10, whatever. $1 million, $10 million, $100 million. We know of one fellow that he earns millions a year, and he gives away everything that he doesn't need. He lives in a modest home, and he's a writer, and you would know his name. Very common name for success. And when he puts out a new book, you know, there's several million dollars that he gets right away. And when he gets the money, the first thing he does is figure out how to give it away. He gives away everything he doesn't need, and he doesn't need much. He lives a very modest life. He's very happy with that. He lives in a remote area of the U.S., away from the hustle and bustle. Lives out in the country. Very quiet life. Yeah, he understands the value of giving. Are you a giver? Remember, you've got a lot of things you can give. Money is certainly good to give, but there's many other things also. Do you have extra cars, extra houses? I had a friend that was collecting antique cars. He got tired of dusting them. So he He sold them and utilized the funds in a more giving way. Do you have anything like that? Bliss Knapp, when he was around 7 or 8 years old, his mother had a tragic accident, cost her life. So Mary Baker Eddy, you know, Ira Knapp, which was Bliss Knapp's father, was one of the early ones in the CS movement, and he was traveling around giving lectures. He was one of them that was probably doing horse and buggy or riding a horse, riding a train parts of the way. So Mary Baker Eddy took him under her tutelage, Bliss Knapp. This was probably around 1880 or so. And he passed on in 1958. When he passed on, he had an estate of $400 million. Now, if that had been invested in 1958 at 10% a year, I think that comes out to around $220 billion. That's a 10%. If you just use what the increases in the consumer price index, it's only about 3.67% per year over the period of time of when he passed on to now. And you'd have about, I think it was around $2.2 billion. He had in his will, I think it was a will, maybe it was a trust. Anyway, he had in there that he was going to give the whole thing to the Mother Church. Now imagine, if it was $220 billion, I mean, that's like, you would be probably the second wealthiest person in the U.S., in the world. The wealthiest one is around $400 billion, and number two, I think, is less than half of that. So you'd probably be number two of the wealthiest person in the world. And he had it all arranged for it all to go to the Mother Church. Somehow, I think he lost his intelligence when he did that. He must have known about their corruption, about their violation of the manual and everything else that they've done. But anyway, that's what he had arranged. So they were set to receive $400 million back in those days, 1958. So that, like I say, that'd be $2 billion today. And they said no, because he had a requirement on there that they were to publish his book. He wrote a book called The Destiny of the Mother Church. And it showed Mary Baker Eddy's place in prophecy. And they didn't want the cat to get out of the bag because they had done so much against Mary Baker Eddy. The day that she passed on in 1910, they took her picture out of the textbook. Can you imagine that? They hated her so much, and they tried to get rid of the truth so badly that they thought taking her picture out of the textbook would get rid of truth. There were monuments all over the New England states, and they had them all taken down and destroyed. Someone had built her a pyramid that was to scale of the Great Pyramid in Gaza. I'm wondering if that has been destroyed by these idiots over there in Israel, the Zionist. Anyway, I know I'm not supposed to criticize. I didn't criticize a person. All I said was the idiots. So anyway, I hope they didn't destroy the Great Pyramid of Gaza. But anyway, this was done on a scale of that, utilizing the largest piece of New Hampshire granite that had ever been mined. And the Mother Church Board of Directors blew it up. And they had the pieces buried in multiple locations so that it could never be reassembled. I mean, I don't know how they even moved that piece that was such tremendous. I mean, I think it was around 50 or 60 years ago that this pyramid was built. It was not in 1910. It was sometime after that. I think it was around 60 or 70 years ago. I haven't looked up the date in a long time. But anyway, they did everything to try to get rid of her. Everything to have a memory. Now, I'm going to tell you something right now. If you don't give credit to Mary Baker Eddy, forget about trying to have any healing in Christian Science. Just forget about it. You cannot separate, that's part of the thing that we tell you in those links I gave you, the buttons that are on at the top of every page, you know, those four, one that said how Christian Science heals, divine metaphysics, system platform, and heal everything. They tell you very clearly that you cannot separate the discoverer from the discovery, period. Just like you forget about healing if you're not going to be a giver. If you're not going to be willing to give at least 10% of everything that you have and everything you earn, forget about it. Are you having trouble having a healing? Well, you better check it. What some of the rules are, some of the ground rules. You can't separate the discoverer from the discovery, and you better be living a life of generous giving. You want to be an A-plus student? You better give around 30% or more. Like I said, the one I know of gives everything he doesn't need, and he lives in a modest home. He's happy as a lark. Look at Tucker Carlson. I don't know what he was making, but I would guess that he was probably making $20 million a year when he was with Fox. They fired him because he was not following the Zionist plan of bashing President Trump, and they wanted him to be a globalist and a World Economic Forum puppet. He said, forget it. So he was talking about in his last few sessions on Fox, the opposite. He was talking truth, and they fired him. So he's happy as a lark. He's living a quiet life up in the woods. Kind of like the other fellow I mentioned to you. Make plenty of money, but he wants a life like that. I'll tell you, if you've had extravagant homes with maids and gardeners and all that kind of stuff, plenty of cars, plenty of houses, then when you change your lifestyle, you will appreciate what it is to have a quiet life with not having all of these material things suffering or suffocating you, and having people in and out of your house all day taking care of it. Even if they live on the grounds, they're in and out of your house taking care of it. You cannot appreciate what it is to have a quiet life and have a simple life where you can enjoy nature or whatever you like. If you like to be on the ocean like me, where you can enjoy that. I have a friend that they live in a busy area in the city, and every weekend, every day, they drive about 45 minutes one way. So they're driving an hour and a half a day to get up into the woods, and they take a walk in the woods for a couple of hours a day. every day. I don't know, maybe on the weekends they don't. But Monday through Friday, they're up in the woods, enjoying nature, enjoying the sounds of the woods. Yep. These are two different lifestyles. And you can either get sucked into materialism, or you can elevate above it. Everyone has to work out their own salvation. Everyone is unique. And we can't work out someone else's salvation, and we shouldn't even try to give them advice. We should stay out of their thought. Like Mary Baker Eddy says, you've got enough to take care of your own without messing around with someone else's thought. Let everyone work out their own salvation. And your salvation is in your own consciousness. What you think about yourself, as well as what you think about everyone else, is right inside your consciousness. And you better stick to that and take care of it and be concerned about two things. Making sure you never separate the writer from his works. And that includes all these other top people. Okay? Rosson and Winslow. And Joel Goldsmith. All these people that were great people that could heal in 15 minutes. Joel Goldsmith went into the Benevolent Association, which is the nursing home for Christian Scientists up in, I don't know, I think it might be in Boston. I don't recall offhand. And everyone was ill. Everyone. And one person called him in there. And when he came in the front door, she said, I don't know whether you should be in here because everybody's got this problem and it's considered to be contagious. He almost laughed at her in the face. He said, well, you've only got one problem here. How many people are here? And she told him, it was full, it was packed full, and everybody had the same problem. He said, you've only got one problem here. The belief that evil is real. All you have to do is heal that one thing. He was there a few minutes, and when he left, every single person was healed. Everyone. Every single person was healed. When he left, he treated the illness. He didn't treat a person. You cannot treat a person if you want to heal the problem. The problem is not the person. The problem is the evil. And most people cannot find the evil because they look at the symptom instead of the evil. Mary Baker Eddy had one of her students come to her. Well, she let them come to her when they couldn't heal a case, at least in the early days. And she said, well, they explained what the problem was. She said, well, what are you working on? She said, that's not the problem. She said, in this particular case, it's malpractice. Yep. If you're not able to heal quickly, then you better check the rules of the road. Have you separated the discoverer from the discovery? And it doesn't matter what book or what thing you're doing, whether it's any of these people that were really the top advanced people in Christian Science, or whether it's Mary Baker Eddy herself, writings that you're using, or the Bible. Are you giving credit to the authors of the thoughts that you're studying in the Bible? How about Habakkuk? Have you ever read Habakkuk? He's the one that said that God is too pure, has purer eyes than to behold evil. I mean, I use that every day. That's one of the greatest verses in the whole Bible. And how about Peter in Acts? He said, what did he say? He said, God is no respecter of persons. God is no respecter of persons. How about that? Should we be working for a person? Nope. Should we be trying to heal a person? Nope. I use those all the time. They're wonderful quotes. Remember, we're supposed to be using our moments. We must give gratitude to everyone whose works that we have used when we're doing a treatment. Everyone. I've named off a number of them here. Named off Moses. I am that I am. Obviously, Mary Baker Eddy, the definition of God on page 465 and 587, and the definition of good, 587. Her definition of divine metaphysics on 146. Her introduction to the platform on page 330. Jesus. John. Frederick L. Rassen, Wentworth Winslow, Joel Goldstein, Joel Goldsmith, yeah. Anyway, I'm grateful to every one of these people who devoted their life to promoting the works and the healing Christianity that Mary Baker Eddy discovered and named Christian Science. Oh, and also Dr. Fluno and Dr. Einstein. Oh, if you want to learn the Bible, the very best source, in my humble opinion, hopefully it's humble, is Dr. Robert C. Putnam. And he was, Bliss Knapp. I'm grateful for Bliss Knapp. Putnam was, as I mentioned, was Bliss Knapp's student, and he has a book that's 169 pages. I think I did mention it. Anyway, it's like an index, and it covers every important character in the Bible, Old and New Testament. And don't think you can just read 169 pages and have it, because you might have to read a whole book of one author, or a whole chapter at least, in order to understand what he says on one line that he has in the book, because it's an index. And he gives you all the references that you need to read in order to get all the documentary background on what he's saying. He's got all the proof there on why Jesus is not God, and also why about Jesus coming back in the flesh and dictating the book of Revelation to John on the island of Patmos. He's got the whole works. I'm grateful for every single one that I've learned from. And for the lady that was my longtime friend until she went on to a different view around the corner that I can't see her now, that watched the Olympics and said, look at the grace of that person. She said, qualities, qualities, all his qualities. Very grateful for her. I'm grateful for the teacher that I had, because it was when I went to the city to the annual association that was the same city as where this other person lived, and we all attended the church service. And when I went to the church service, that's when I met this lady that became my longtime friend. So, yeah, I'm grateful for my teacher, who was the reason I was in town. Another thing we want to do is we want to be grateful for the truth that was revealed to us during our treatment. So whatever truth was uncovered and came to the surface that was discussed in this treatment, I'm very grateful for it. And if you heard something that wasn't the truth, then I apologize that I didn't get myself out of the way. Mary Baker Eddy said she could heal instantaneously when she got Mary out of the way. So if I didn't get myself out of the way, I apologize. If it's truth, unvarnished truth, then it came from God. And if it wasn't, then it came from a personality, and I'm sorry. So I'm very grateful for every little morsel of truth that came to thought. And it's always good to close by sealing it with something that is direct and to the point. I'm going to read to you the Diapason of Heaven, which was something that Mary Baker Eddy taught in her 1881 to 1898 classes. Very, very valuable things. And if you want to have a transcript of those, of notes of those classes, we have it. And a special deal where we can give you a PDF on it. But you have to buy the transcript from another organization, which we will arrange for you. And it's a very good price. And boy, it's something that we use all the time. So here's the Diapason of Heaven on the synonym for God, which is mind. Diapason of Heaven for mind. It begins with an introduction from the quote from Miscellaneous Writings, page 206. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed, mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this Diapason of Heaven, quote, "Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love." We can declare often, "Divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all loving, all knowing, all seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God." We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names from personal sense to spiritual sense, and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen.